All right, welcome to episode 51, also sometimes called season 2, episode 19 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Hugh, and joining me with his sleek new design is Rob.
Yeah, I am also discless.
Yes. Digital edition and physical edition.
That available in. That term always bugs me because it's all digital. You know what I mean?
Right, you're not playing analog games.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that term always bugged me. But yeah, so how's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I've been keeping a little bit busy. I posted this big article this week. Are you familiar with Google Newspaper Archives?
No, I am not.
Yeah, so like 15 or so years ago, Google said they were going to scan and index like every newspaper that's ever been printed, right? And then, like most Google projects, they got bored with it. And then a few newspapers like asked for their content to be removed.
Of course.
Stuff like New York Times, I think, used to be on there. And that's all like, you know, you can pay New York Times to get old editions, right? But they don't want it just free on Google, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I figured they got about 10% done with their goal. And at some point, Google's going to shut that site down. Just because it's Google, right? That's what they do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so I went through during numerous bouts with insomnia or boredom and just scraped anything that came up for various video game related searches,
mm-hmm.
Which you'd think there'd be a lot, but again, because they didn't really, like, I don't think they got that far in the indexing process. So like, unless you want to actually go through paper by paper and look for articles about video games, which I would not advise doing, it's very boring. You're kind of stuck with what comes back from their searches. And so I collected all those and put them up on my site. We'll have a link to the show. But it's a lot of, like, you know, video game, you know, boom and bust in the early 80s. And then in the 90s, like, a lot of moral panic articles.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of, like, senators who voted for multiple wars are now concerned that children might see violence on TV. Right.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. And then a lot of, like, in the 80s, there's a lot of articles about towns like banning arcades because they're afraid kids are going to ditch school to go to the arcade. Which to me seems like you're going after the wrong problem.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Like, what the kids do, like, if I ditch school and just watch The Price is Right, I wouldn't be, like, my parents wouldn't be calling for The Price is Right to be taken off the air.
Yeah, yeah. You were literally trying to do anything but go to school at that point.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of that, a lot of articles about, like, Nintendo suing someone or being sued. And then just sort of debates over whether, you know, video games are harmful to children in some way.
Yeah, we've been wrestling with that at my house because my kid has been playing a lot of video games, and I keep thinking, like, am I doing the wrong thing by just letting this go? And no, I think it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, I don't worry about it for one second, honestly. And then I finished Final Fantasy VII Remake, which really should just be called, like, Final Fantasy Remake Demo Disc, right? Because like, it's if you think you're getting a full game, you're really not, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, like, complaining. Like, I knew going into it, it was not, like, a full-blown game. But it is definitely shorter than I thought it would be. And then I got the East 4 Remake in the mail today. Or not today, yes, 2 or 3 days ago, because I've been playing it for a couple nights.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, it does, you know, being an early Vita game, it really just sort of looks like a late PSP game. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So then upscaled for the PS4, it sort of is like you're playing a very, very late PSP game on your PS4. Like, it doesn't... They really didn't improve... I mean, again, I knew what I was getting into. Like, they didn't really... They upscaled the graphics. They didn't, like, improve them. It's still a really fun game, though. Like honestly, it might be my favorite installment in the East series because it's just a really, really fun game. It's up there with, like, East 8 for favorite game in the series. I don't know which one it would be hard for me to pick one over the other. They are a little bit different, of course, but it's just a really fun game. I'll probably end up playing through it pretty quickly, is my guess. What about you? Been up to anything interesting?
Nothing too amazing, but yeah, just wanted to give a shout out to the Pie Factory. I loved their BBS episode they just put out. So if anyone's interested in Atari heavy podcasts, that's the one for you. Yeah, again, trying to play more games with my son. I got the Nintendo Clubhouse game, which is like board games on your Switch, but you play it, I think, not with a controller. It's meant to be played kind of touchscreen, I think.
Okay.
I don't know. We tried playing it, and I couldn't figure it out immediately, and he lost interest, so we still haven't really tried that one out yet, but I'm excited because there's just a ton of small games in there that look really fun. And then just more Pac-Man 256, but with my son also playing a two-player. So you play as two Pac-Man at once, or you could change your avatar. It's kind of fun. And then I also, in the mail, I'm holding this up for the camera. I kickstarted this over a year ago. It's a Genki Switch dock, which is just a little mini power supply, USB-C, and HDMI out for your Switch. It's very portable. It's supposed to be very durable. And it's supposed to kind of fit in Switch carrying cases. So it's kind of cool when you kickstart something and it takes so long to come out that you kind of get a free... It feels like you're getting a free product in the mail.
Right. Right. So I assume that doesn't work with the Switch Lite because it predates the Switch Lite and you mentioned HDMI out.
Yeah, well, it'll probably... Does the Switch Lite have USB-C to...
Yeah, okay. It's the same power... It's the same power supply.
Yeah, so you could probably use it to power it, and that's about it. But, yeah, so just kind of went... I haven't tried it yet, haven't unboxed it, but it's kind of cool that came in. And, yeah, that's really about it. Still haven't touched my TurboGrafx Mini. It is still boxed.
Okay. Yeah, I've been playing mine a little, you know. I've been kind of slowly working through Dracula X.
Oh, nice.
A game I'm not very good at, but that I do enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. And then also watching... I'm finally getting into Twitch a little bit. On my phone, I actually have some alerts now when some retro players start streaming. So maybe in a few episodes, I'll give some reviews of that. So I'm finally getting into the 2010s. But we don't have that many news items, but we should probably get going on them.
So, say, listener submission from Rick. Game Boy Advanced SP with two screens. This is a why would you do this hack? But yes.
So it's Game Boy Advanced SP, and it's two screens. They don't fold like the DS. It's just like one on top of the other, stacked. And they both display the exact same thing.
Right. So, if they were displaying different things, I guess... But, of course, you'd have to write a game that could do that. So.
Or, if you put them back to back, so if someone's sitting across from you, they could see what you're playing.
Hmm. That's definitely a thing I wanted.
Yeah.
Neat. I mean, it's kind of a neat little mod, but neat, but not at all useful.
Yeah, I think he just wanted to see if it would work, and it does.
Yeah, well, a lot of great ideas, I guess, start that way. So,
this next one from RetroRGB, I'm not sure how to pronounce this. Is it Stonka or Stika? S-T, the number one, K-A.
That's how I was going to pronounce it.
Interview with the 3D NES emulator creator. So in a few episodes of this podcast, we mentioned the 3D NES emulator that takes your NES games and makes them look kind of 3D. And it's a really cool effect. And this guy interviews him, but the guy that created this doesn't speak English. So it's through a translator or through Google Translate, something like that. It sounded a bit robotic, I think, but or AI. But it's a really cool interview. He asks a lot of pretty technical questions. Pretty much, how do you make something 2D into 3D? I would definitely suggest watching this. He talks about probably moving into other 8-bit consoles and doing the same thing for those, but not 16-bit consoles just because the graphics are too complex to do.
Yeah. Yeah, now what if you took like the original Phantasy Star, like if you went to do Master System next and then made that 3D? That would be quite a trip. I don't know how that would work.
Yeah, well, he did ask about, are you going to make it so it just works in every single NES game before you move on? And he pretty much said, like, no, because that doesn't make sense, because how would isometric games work?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I couldn't think of, like, a first-person NES game. Maybe Goonies 2 has, like, a first-person stage.
Yeah. This guy, it sounds like he has a Russian accent, and it just kind of made me laugh because it sounded fake, but I know it's not. You know what I mean? But pretty entertaining interview.
Nintendo's GBA dev board on Hackaday. No, it's a board that has like a little miniature. Is that a screen built into the dev board?
Yeah.
That's the part that I think is cool. It's got like a little speaker and a screen on it. So I guess they're basically saying on Hackaday this could pass for like one of their projects.
And I was going to say, if you click on the video, it's Hard for Games, who was just on this show.
Oh, yeah. There you go. This is exactly the kind of thing they would post.
Yeah. So pretty cool. Yeah, go to Hackaday or just go to YouTube's Hard for Games.
Now, what's kind of neat about it is like the board has a D-pad and then the four buttons, you know, A, B, X, Y. But they're not like full buttons. They're like the little, you know, the thing underneath the button, which I guess is maybe technically the button.
Yeah.
But then it has an adapter to hook up a Super Nintendo controller, which I assume is how most people tested it.
That's crazy. All right. So on Ars Technica, how Sega hopes use Japanese arcade as streaming data centers. So, yeah, if we understand this right, they are going to repurpose or start with new Japanese arcade games in Japanese arcades to, I guess, sell the processing power, maybe?
Yeah, I guess I would assume they're, because you can go out to, like, any of the cloud services today and lease GPU time. Mm-hmm. So if you have some sort of problem that you think you need a GPU to solve, like Bitcoin mining or some other scammy thing, right? Trying to decrypt passwords, stuff mm-hmm. like that, right?
Yeah.
You can rent GPU time. Presumably all these arcade machines have GPU cards that are idle most of the day. So I guess the idea is when they're not playing a game, you could lease the time and make, I don't know, brute force passwords. I don't know, whatever possibly illegal thing you want to do with a GPU.
Well, and they're calling this fog gaming. So maybe they will have a console, or you could do it in a Chrome browser or something, play these Sega arcade games at home. You know, you pay $5 a month or whatever, and you could use their fog gaming service where unused arcade games are being streamed to you, maybe?
I suppose you could do that as well. You could maybe do some kind of rendering or Photoshop-y stuff, I guess.
Yeah. Or it's just Google Stadia.
Yeah, it could be a thing like that. I know you're like the owner of Google Stadia, right?
Not anymore.
I say that because I don't believe they've sold more than one.
I know. I gave up my pro membership because there's literally no reason for it.
But don't you still have this? Isn't there some sort of device you have to have?
Well, I already had a Chromecast, and I have the Stadia controller. But you don't even need the controllers anymore. You could use any controller.
You can use...
like a PS4. Like a PS4 or an Xbox controller.
Oh, okay. So Stadia is not a game system.
No, it's just a streaming service. So if you like Bluetooth tether, you know, your PS4 controller to your computer and load up Chrome, uh-huh. You could play Stadia that way.
Uh-huh. But why wouldn't I just put Steam on my computer?
There you go.
Okay.
But the one cool thing about Stadia is that I have a Chromecast on, you know, two TVs in my house, and I have, you know, Chrome on my computers. If my kids want to watch something on one TV that I was playing Stadia on, I could just take my controller, move to the other TV, and it's still playing. It was just, like, paused. So, if you want to pay monthly for that, you can. I decided All right. not to. But
great. So now they have no subscribers.
Yes. But I do want to say that this the Sega Fog Gaming, it's not that we can't read this article. It's that it's only been kind of half announced, if announced at all. It's just kind of a leak,
yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
It's really that we just don't understand it. So let's see. On RetroRGB.com, there is a... Castlevania Symphony of the Night hack that uses this is for Sega Saturn, that uses the RAM cart for faster loading and better animations. That's a really cool idea.
Yes. I want to try this out.
And that's something I don't know if Sega planned for the RAM cart to be used as like a cache or an intermediate working space. Mm-hmm. Clearly for faster loading times, they must be using it as a cache. As an extra 4 meg cache. Oh.
Yeah, that's a fascinating idea. Like that, no one's done this before, or if anything, it's rare that they do it.
It might mean there's a limit on how much, you know. It probably limits how many things you can then save on the cartridge, because I think the purpose of that RAM drive was to save your game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Well. I don't know. There's
But 4 meg cache for Sega Saturn era is a pretty big cache. Like, let's just be blunt. Like, that's a pretty good amount of space for that.
Aren't some of the cartridges like multi-use? Like, there's the same save game cartridge, and then there's the RAM upgrade cart.
I'm only familiar. So, this is me not being a Saturn expert. I'm only familiar with the ones that are used to save games. I'm not really familiar with the use for the Sega Saturn cart. Outside of that, I haven't researched it. You know, I own a Saturn and I play it, but I'm definitely not a Saturn hardware expert.
Well, okay, so some of these games require the 4 RAM cartridge, like Street Fighter 03, Vampire Saviors, X-Men versus Street Fighter. Some require at least the 1 meg upgrade, which is pretty much all the Neo Geo games that were ported to it. There's a Sega Netlink that plugged into it.
So it must be usable as a RAM upgrade.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the thing you put in the Nintendo 64.
Yes. The thing that Nintendo 64 probably should have just came with.
Right.
But, and it's funny because the Saturn was kind of made to be the ultimate 2D machine, but this game, Dracula X, played better on other systems? Debatably.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of history about the Saturn being kind of a tough system for people to develop for. I probably have the Saturn SDK on my hard drive, and I guess I could look at the APIs and try and get an idea of what it would take to actually write a game for the thing, other than I'm not interested in ever doing that.
And yeah, you probably don't have the time to dive into something like that too.
Yeah, I mean, I barely have time to do the next to nothing that I do all day. I do have the Sega Saturn SDK. Look at that. I gotta look at the system requirements here, I guess, and see what sort of VM. It has Windows 95 and Windows NT installers.
Huh.
Well, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the system was released in... I'm actually surprised it has a Windows 95. This must be a newer version, right? Because if you think about it, Windows 95 was not out when the Saturn was developed.
Yeah. Jeez. I always think of the Saturn being later, but yeah, that's probably right.
Yeah, I mean, it happened to be out until 1997, or I think it was maybe formally discontinued in 98. But development for it started in, I mean, if it launched in 94... launched in 95, sorry. So development had to start in like 94. So the first tools were probably MS-DOS.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Sonic 3D Blast is better in 2D.
Okay, I believe that.
So this is on Kotaku. I think this looks fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, I looked at it a little bit. It does look pretty good.
So there's a full launch trailer here. It's almost 2 minutes long. And, yeah, I would say definitely look at this if you're a Sonic fan. And it's just reimagined as a 2D Sonic game. And it looks like a really good 2D Sonic game with, yeah, all the three main characters. And
yeah, but I didn't think 3D Blast was bad. I think maybe some people do. I thought it was all right. But yeah, I think it's definitely going to be better as a 2D game.
Yeah, yeah. And that's pretty much what this article says too. It's not knocking it too hard, but yeah. I'm going to try to get this.
See, coffee table that turns into an arcade. Well, an arcade setup. Arcade sticks specifically. So this is one of these like overpriced pieces of furniture for I don't know who. I've seen other products by this company before. I don't see a price on this. I'm assuming this is just a example thing. But the company that makes it is Love Halton. Is that right? They did this other thing that I was like really impressed with, which is like this wall-mounted wood grain arcade thing. So it's like literally like an arcade cabinet, but you mount it to the wall and it's just the joystick and screen and it looks really awesome and it's almost $5,000.
Oof, yeah.
And they made like a wood grain little like desk size. It looks like a cigar box, but you open it up and there's a joystick and screen and buttons. And that's like a little over $3,000. And they have a full standing arcade cabinet that is something like close to 6,000 with tax. I mean, again, I'm doing like, 'cause it's all EU prices, so I'm trying to convert it to US dollars in my head. So this coffee table with arcade sticks, yeah, it sure is really nice. Probably gonna be $6,000.
Yeah, and it's not like it comes with beefy hardware in it. It looks like a Raspberry Pi is built in or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah, you're buying it to impress people, I guess. I don't know. I'm not big on impressing people, so I would never think to buy this.
No, no. And, the joysticks are handles that you unscrew after you pull out the control panel area, and then you screw them in on the top, and they actually become workable joysticks, and... Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of cool. What I like about their stuff is it all looks very 50s or early 60s. But again, I don't want to pay thousands of dollars for that.
Yeah, yeah. Or just be good enough to build that yourself.
Yes. And then you could sell it for $6,000.
Yeah. So Polygon has a link to a game bundle that I assume a lot of people bought this week. They call it the best video game bundle ever. So this is a fundraiser bundle for racial justice and equality. Mm-hmm. And, it's a very, very low price. So I would actually encourage you to pay more than the list price, which I did. So it's, for $5, you get, how many games is this? 7,000 something. No, 740. I added one more zero. I remember thinking that if I tried, that I got this demo, And just for me to like download it all is going to take, and I can download it all. I downloaded like the 20 or 30 things I was most interested in. But just to try like one thing a day would take you 2 years. And some of these are all pretty much all indie games. Let's say they're all indie, you know. When I say indie, I mean like, you know, one or two person projects. But it also includes stuff like game assets. So if you just want like, you know, tiles and fonts, that kind of stuff, it's in there. And then it's got games like A Short Hike, which, you know, maybe isn't retro, but apparently is really well reviewed. People seem to think this is like a really great game, I guess. I bought this. Yeah, there's only a couple days left. Maybe it'll be over by the time this episode gets released. Maybe they extend it longer. I don't know. But, you know, it's a good deal and good cause. So,
yeah. And
go ahead and get it.
As of recording this episode, they've made over $6 million, which is really cool. Yeah. Very, very cool.
It'll take me 2 years just to download this, to figure out what in it I want to play.
Just to figure out what you want to play, then you have to start.
Yeah, just figure out what I want to play. Yeah. And then a couple, real quick section on some long-lost and preserved games. We talked about Sim Refinery, although that would be
that'd be
incredibly
a good game.
Awesome game. Yeah. someone found a prototype, and I guess now you can play it. Probably can't export it to North Korea, but outside of that, it looks like a fully functional game. And Joust for Commodore 64, which I can't believe was a lost game.
Yeah, yeah, this looks like a cool port too.
It does. I mean, Joust on NES is really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine a C64 version would be pretty close to that.
I mean, even Joust on 2600 is not bad at all.
It's borderline playable, yes. 7800 Joust is really good too.
Yeah, yeah. Coleco is really good too.
I don't know if I've played the Coleco version. But I imagine it's good.
Yeah, I have a vivid memory of it because some kid down the road when I was growing up had a Coleco, and that was our go-to game. And I would always come back home and play it on my 2600 and think about how much better Coleco was, at least for that one game.
Yeah, pretty much any game that is on both Atari 2600 and Coleco, ColecoVision version is going to be better.
Yeah.
Like 7800 versus ColecoVision. Generally, the 7800 versions are better. I guess I really should compare some of these.
Yeah, they're probably pretty close. But yeah, the 7800 is probably a bit better. And that is our short news section of the week.
All right. So I think for a future topic, I want to talk a little bit. You know, the PS5 was announced this week, and I don't want to talk like exclusively about like new games, but what I was sort of fascinated by with the PS5 launch titles, or at least the confirmed like first few games, kind of like when you go back and you look at like the PlayStation 1, 2, 3, 4 launch titles, right? There's almost like a checklist that Sony must have of like types of games that must appear on the system.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because if you look, it's like, oh yeah, there's definitely a pattern that they're following throughout the years here. You know, if you go back to like PlayStation 1, you have, you know, Air Combat, you have Battle Arena Toshinden, you have to have a fighter game, ESPN Extreme Games, NBA Jam, a couple other sports games, Street Fighter, Rayman and Ridge Racer were like the main ones, right? And then with like PlayStation 2, you know, not the exact same lineup, but the same kind of thing where it's like, okay, you know, here's the driving game and Of course, they had like ESPN Extreme Games, something, something for the PlayStation 2 also. But like, you know, here are the sports games. Here's the one-on-one fighter. Here's the kind of cutesy platformer game, right? They kind of had like all these boxes checked in each generation. And at least looking at like what they did with the PS5. First of all, what's your first impression of the PS5?
I actually like how it looks. I'm excited for some of the games. Am I going to get it right when it comes out? Probably not. I'm most excited for the new Horizon game. I really loved that. Was my game of the year when that Horizon Zero Dawn came out. I could really tell, you know, a lot of people were saying like, yeah, it looks beautiful, but is it really that much better than the PS4 Pro? And really what it comes down to is the lights and the shadows look a lot better. The 3D audio, the surround sound is a lot better. And all that stuff is much easier to code. So games won't take as long to code, I guess. But I don't know. I'm happy with my Switch. And that's pretty much a portable system, you know?
Yeah. I mean, my own view is I will wait until East 10 is announced for the U.S.
They didn't touch on backwards compatibility either.
No, but they've made a comment in the past that there would be something that Sony calls backwards compatibility.
It would be so nice to go all the way back, though, to PS1.
Yeah, but they're not going to do that. I mean, what they will do is let you buy an upscaled version of a PS1 game.
Mm-hmm. So we're going back to, okay, the PS1 launch titles. Is that the first one that had Wipeout?
It had Wipeout, but Wipeout, so this is confusing. Wipeout was not a U.S. launch title. Wipeout was a European launch title. And it was a long box game. So that's why everyone thinks it's a launch title, probably.
Okay.
Because there was that great era of PlayStation 1 where you had the long box, which to me is superior to the jewel case in basically every way.
Absolutely, yeah.
But that era did not last long. No. Unfortunately. Because they weren't like... So I'm trying to get off on tangent here because we didn't really prepare for this. But like the Saturn and Sega CD also had the long box, right? But it was like the most flimsy thing ever designed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right?
Like,
yeah.
You basically cannot find a Saturn or Sega CD box that you know, is not cracked. Whereas the original, like, cardboard PlayStation boxes, those things, for things being made out of cardboard, they're almost completely indestructible.
Yeah.
And yeah. You could probably make those out of, like, recycled material and stuff, too. But yeah, so again, the thing that struck me about the PS5 launch, again, is just, like, you know, like I said, how it sort of does like checkboxes. Like it has stuff like Astro's Playroom, which is sort of like a cutesy adventure-ish game, which is like, you know, going back to the first launch, like Rayman, right? You know, so yeah, you have like the cutesy platformer. I haven't seen much for the PS5 in terms of sports games yet, although it's safe to assume they will have them. I know, I think they announced the something called Ultimate Fishing Simulator. It's not a joke. It's a real thing they announced. And then, of course, is it Resident Evil 8 or not?
Yes, it is. But okay. It's still called Village, but it is Resident Evil 8.
Yeah, so that, of course, is a throwback, because Resident Evil, I know it was on multiple systems, but for all intents and purposes, it was a PlayStation game.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I believe, right. I mean, like, yes, you could buy it for the Sega Saturn, but...
But going back to the sports game, the weird announcement was the NBA game, because the only footage actually didn't have any crowd in it.
Right, so... because the virtual crowd is going to get COVID-19.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I don't know if they're going to keep true to it, or I don't know, like, what is... Yeah, it's so strange, so...
And then the other one, of course, is Destruction Derby. So Destruction Derby, I believe, was also technically not a PlayStation launch title. But it's really, really, really close to being a PlayStation launch title.
Mm-hmm.
It was within the first month of the system being out. And that they have a new Destruction Derby game, which I admit is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, that looked fun and chaotic and crazy.
But again, when I end up buying the system after East 10 is announced for the US, which I predict will be 2028, that game should be like $19.
Yeah.
And then the last thing, that we kind of hinted at the beginning of the show, that Sony is still not committed to killing off physical media yet. So, like, I think Microsoft has been trying to kill off physical media. Obviously, like, the first Xbox X, One X... Wait, what was the thing they announced a while ago?
Xbox Series X.
Well, no, the thing that's currently the current Xbox. When that was first announced, it had no physical media. Remember? And then there was a big uproar, and then it had physical media again.
Oh, yeah. The Xbox One X, when they first announced it, you weren't going to be able to sell your games. Once you bought a game, it was going to be serial numbered to your
Xbox. Okay. So it had a physical drive, but it was essentially not a physical drive because it was...
Used games wouldn't work. Yeah.
Right.
Which is garbage.
And so they're kind of doing the thing they did with the PSP and the Vita, where they're going to have one version that plays physical media in another version that is download only.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is they're going to try and make the download only one a little bit cheaper. If they were smart, it would have a bigger hard drive, right?
Yes.
Because obviously it's download only. I suspect they will have the same size hard drive, is my guess. But they're not giving up on it. Like, if you want physical media, you can still get it, which I think is great.
Yeah, yeah, it's good to actually own something. You know, you buy that physical thing, you actually own it, where, you know, we're already running into things like Xbox Live doesn't exist anymore, that kind of thing. You know, Wii Virtual Store, all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, the Wii stuff, at least you can download all that. But if you haven't downloaded something, I guess at this point you've lost it, right? If you bought a game
yes.
for the Wii, I don't think you can re-download it now.
I don't think so. I know with PS3 you still can as long as you had it in your, as long as you bought it.
Yeah, I think the Wii is your. I don't know. I haven't tried downloading a game on the Wii, but you know eventually these things are going. They're going to stop distributing this stuff. So.
And then cool people will create their own stores, hopefully, or you know, kind of like the Xbox Live coming back.
Someone will come up with something. But, like, overall, I mean, I was kind of like, okay, I end up buying every PlayStation console, so I'll end up buying this as well at some point. But it was definitely not like I'm going to rush out and buy that, you know, at launch time.
The one of the games that I didn't know about that was actually really exciting to me was that Kena Bridge of Spirits mm-hmm. games. It kind of seemed like a Breath of the Wild-like.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I am kind of interested in that one too. And going back to like the original PlayStation and PlayStation 2, there really weren't games like that at the time. So that one is maybe a little bit unique, but I think game companies do have to do something Breath of the Wild like to sell systems now.
Was Gran Turismo first released on PS1?
Yeah.
Cause that game now, I mean, it looks like real cars. And I'm sure you could still buy the peripheral of the gas pedal, the brake, and the steering wheel. People love those games.
Yeah, I think Gran Turismo has only ever been... I think that's a PlayStation exclusive series, because I believe Sony is the publisher for it.
Mm.
And it started on PlayStation. It's been on every PlayStation console, occasionally as a launch title, often as a later game. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm more fond of, like, the Burnout style of driving games where you're rewarded for crashing. I mentioned
yes.
my love of Destruction Derby.
Yes.
Like I don't want to drive on a precision track and, you know, have to, like, learn how to drive a car properly.
And I guess GTA 5 is going to be on every console from here till eternity?
Yeah, I thought that was a very weird thing for them to open up with. Like, we're launching a new system. It can play GTA 5. I'm like, great. That came out on... That was a PlayStation 3 game originally, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, bizarre. That was the oddest thing to open it with.
Yeah, but, you know, I like the look of the system. I like the specs of the system. I've never owned an Xbox. I'm not hating on the Xbox. You know, I have no reason not to like it. But I was just always a Sony person.
Yeah.
And I did really like that Marvel Spider-Man game on PS4, so I'm excited for the Miles Morales sequel to it.
Yeah, I'm way behind the times. I didn't realize there were multiple Spider-Men.
And the new Ratchet & Clank. My all-time... I think Ratchet & Clank is my favorite video game series. Even more than, you know, Mario or Zelda or Metroid. Possibly even more than East, I think. Ratchet & Clank. I just enjoy those games. And I have ever since... Geez, PS2, right?
Yeah, I think it's around PS2. I've really not ever been into the series.
I love that series. I think the best one, if you want to jump into one and not start from the beginning, the Into the Nexus is just a great game. And you could get it, I think, on almost any, you know, PS3. Yeah, I think it's PS3 and PS4. It's probably dirt cheap now. Highly recommend that game. But all of them are good. Of course, when they showed a few of their first-person shooter games coming out in PS5, I got a little woozy. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Doom was not... Like, there's always first-person shooters in all of these launches. Doom was, I guess, also technically not a launch title, but kind of technically was. Because it was also a very, very, very early game. And quite frankly, I'm happy with Doom. I don't really need more realistic shooters.
Exactly. Yeah. For the most part, I'm not playing for realism. So if anything, for the opposite. But yeah, any final thoughts on PlayStation launches?
No. I mean, obviously the first one's the one I remember best. And it's kind of funny. Like when I was looking at this, I looked at like the list of like PlayStation 2 launch titles and I'm like, huh, I've played zero of those. Like, I don't know how that was, because like I didn't have kids yet when the PlayStation 2 launched. But I for whatever reason, I was tuned out to that one. I mean, I got a PlayStation 2 later, but at launch time, I don't know if it's because like I knew there were going to be shortages. That I'm like, well, I'm not going to be able to buy one anyways, so who cares?
Yeah, when that came out, I was living in Australia. And I didn't get one because I didn't know if or when I was going to be moving back here. They are expensive. Their PAL were NTSC. So I couldn't really just bring it back. But I remember walking through Chinatown and seeing it on opening day or launch day and being blown away. If you have any, you as listeners, if you have any feedback on your PlayStation launch memories, please email us. email@retrogameclub.net.
Yes, especially if you worked a PlayStation launch, any of them. Yeah, especially if you sold out and someone came in and like berated you because you were personally responsible for the PlayStation supply chain. That would be a good one.
It sounds like you have a memory of that or something.
Well, yeah, we didn't. The PlayStation never really. The first PlayStation, I don't really remember like selling out to the point where like we didn't have any for days on end. Like you might be sold out for a day and then the next day you would get more. Like Sony handled the supply chain of the first PlayStation pretty well. Now, what was a problem was the PlayStation came with AV cables, not RF adapter. So then December 26th, we sold out of RF adapters and we were sold out till like end of January. And there were angry parents. Because
I could imagine, yeah.
They did not want their kids hooked. Maybe they had a TV with AV hookups at that point, but they didn't want their kids hooking up their game system on the good TV.
Yeah, wow.
And I think, like, I have an RF adapter for my Dreamcast. I've never hooked it up, but I saw them on clearance. I mean, like, super clearance. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to get an RF adapter for the Dreamcast. Because who knows when I might want to hook up my Dreamcast to a TV that doesn't have regular AV cables. Could happen, right?
Yeah.
So, I know up until the Dreamcast, they were still making RF cables for systems. I would be surprised if the PlayStation 2 doesn't have an RF cable.
They've got to have it for almost everything.
There is all the way up to PS3 RF adapters.
That's insane.
Yep. You can get one right now on Amazon for 99 cents with $8 shipping.
Wow.
So, yeah, I suspect that's not an accessory people really, really want. Oh, yeah, you know what? I have a PlayStation 1 RF adapter, too. But that came with, like, when I bought a box of PlayStation stuff at a yard sale.
So for PS3, what res would your PS3 be at if you use an RF adapter?
I don't know. Bad. Bad. Well, this thing has this particular product has kind of bad reviews. Oh, I think the review says, the description says it works for PS3, but that's not true. Yeah, I you're right. Yeah, there's no possible way to make the PS3 work with an RF adapter. I agree with that.
That's funny.
So yeah, PS2, the PS2, probably GameCube, and the original Xbox probably all have RF adapters. And then after that,
that's got to be it.
That's got to be it. Yeah, it's going to be the last generation to have an RF hookup.
Yeah, wow. Maybe the Wii.
Yeah, okay. Apparently, do it with a converter of some sort. There's not a native one, but it looks like it is possible to make it work. Is what I'm getting at here. Oh, yeah, okay, never mind. Everything I'm seeing basically just says you have to get a converter box. Just a generic AV to RF converter box.
At that point, you know, flat screen TVs now, you could get one for like 99 cents.
Yeah. But, you know, hey, if, you know, you're, I don't know. I'm thinking back to like the commercials when they were rolling out HD TV, right? When they were getting rid of like old school antenna frequencies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you had to get a converter box if you were still using an antenna.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this period of time?
Yeah. That was like 2008, something like that.
Yeah, it feels longer ago. But like you could get a free converter box for that.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
In fact, I went and got a free converter box just because I felt like I pay enough in taxes that they can give me back $20 for a converter box.
Did you ever?
And I had like one TV that I just used to put like, you know, NFL games on that had an old school antenna.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, good times. All right. So that's our topic. RF. RF adapters for systems that should not have RF adapters.
Two topics this time.
I want to talk about our game club games.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Let's see.
You did Space Harrier.
Yeah, I actually just scroll up to see which one, and I just played it today too. That's how out of it I am today. Yeah, Space Harrier. If you don't know the game Space Harrier, I don't know how you're listening to this show, but I'm glad you are, and it is a fantastic game, coded by Yu Suzuki, who also did Hang On and Shenmue. In fact, if you play Shenmue, you could play Space Harrier in the game. It's ported to over 20 systems, most notably the 32X, TurboGrafx, and 3DS. Somehow the 32X is better than the Saturn and the Dreamcast. I don't know how, but it is just an amazing port. The Game Boy Color port is surprisingly good. And yeah, so you play this guy in the Fantasy Zone. It's the first thing it says when you start the game, welcome to the Fantasy Zone. It looks like you're carrying a flying bazooka thing. And you are running and flying and shooting all sorts of one-eyed woolly mammoths and dragons. And every once in a while, you get to fly on the Neverending Story Dragon and as a bonus round. And yeah, this is just a colorful and bright and fun, I guess you would call it a 3D shooter, third-person 3D flying shooter, I guess. I really don't have anything bad to say about this game. I would definitely play the 32X port. I used to love the TurboGrafx port, but after... I was fully ready to stick up for that port in this episode, but after playing many of them, it kind of falls short. It's a little bit choppy, I guess. On the 3DS is the way to play this game, though. There are so many new features and little tweaks to it that just make it fantastic. If you ask me, the way not to play this game is on MAME emulating the arcade, the original arcade version, because the original arcade version used this crazy analog stick that was kind of like, I don't know, Afterburner, I guess. Yeah. And every time it recenters you when you don't want it to. And so even if you're playing on like a PS4 controller with the analog stick, it just doesn't feel right. And the 32X has just as good graphics, I think, as the original arcade version. There's an update for it for the, I think it's PS2, whatever the Sega Ages 2500 collection is. And okay. The PS2 remake is just, have you seen that?
I've seen it, haven't played it.
It makes me sad. It's 3D, real 3D polygon graphics. It's just muted and I guess a product of its time. I don't know. But yeah, what do you think about this game?
Yeah, I mean, I've always like the music. I like the idea of Space Harrier. I've never been like a huge fan of it. Mm-hmm. I have the 32X version, which is indeed very, very good. It was one of the last 32X games. It was kind of the de facto last because it was maybe the last most, like 90% of people would have seen this in the store. You know, the actual last 32X game was Spider-Man Web of Fire. But by then, the system was pretty much out of most stores.
Hmm.
Whereas Space Harrier, which really should have been a launch title for the 32X.
Yeah.
But that came out like early 96, you know. And yeah, it's a good version. The PC Engine version is pretty bad. I played that on the PC Engine Mini. And then I tried the Famicom version, which is actually really good. It's actually a really, really good port of the game. It's definitely better than the PC Engine version.
So what about the PC Engine version makes you say it's bad, and what about the Master System version do you make makes
well,
you say
the
it's good?
Famicom version.
Oh, sorry.
So the PC Engine version, it's just like kind of slow and, for lack of a better term, blinky. Like the sprites will sort of look like, I don't know if if it's an animation problem, but they kind of blinky is the best term I can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't draw well. The music is okay. But like overall, just like the animation and the speed are just way off. And enemies will kind of vanish. Like maybe it's having a hard time keeping up drawing sprites or something. And it's just not a good port. Whereas the Famicom one is a very kind of simplified version of the game. There's not a ton of graphics. I mean, the graphics are lighter. And it plays really, really fast. And they kind of limit it to have like one or two enemies on the screen at a time. And it doesn't seem to be like overwhelming the Famicom hardware.
Hmm. Okay.
And I see that a lot. Like, there's a lot of NES arcade ports that are just really good because they strip the game down a lot.
Yeah, so they keep it fun, but they take out the stuff you don't really need, I guess.
Right, right. They kind of, yeah. So anyhow, yeah, I mean, there are, of course, you know, it's a Famicom game. There's going to be some flicker and there's going to be some, you know, some things that look bad, but like overall, it's a pretty good port.
And yeah, and you could get this on a ton of systems, you know, modern systems now where you don't have to, I think it's pretty much the arcade port, but they fix the control part. I complained about.
So you, I'll go back to the PC support. Like the thing that I found most frustrating about it is like when enemies fire stuff at you, you basically, it basically go the attacks, like their projectiles basically just appear directly in front of you. There's not like they're drawing in at you from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like boom, fireball.
Yeah.
You know, so that part, like it was just kind of frustrating.
And so you're in the fantasy zone, right?
Okay.
Is this game, and then there's the game by Sega, Fantasy Zone. So are you actually, are they the same?
Is it the same Fantasy Zone? Yeah, let's say it is.
Okay. Listeners, you tell us what you think. And I know Wikipedia says some stuff about it, but I'd rather know what you think. Yeah, not really any closing thoughts on this. I do think it's a fantastic game. I do really like this game. And you're right about the music. It is some of the best, I'd say, mid to late 80s arcade music. Definitely recognizable.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of good remixes, too.
Yeah. And Space Hero 2, I've never played.
I have played that. I think I even own it. Hold on. Yeah, I have the cartridge. Yeah. It's on like every Sega collection, Sega Genesis collection.
Oh, then I haven't.
It's like Space Harrier with like new enemies.
But yeah, not really any more closing thoughts. Let's go into your game.
Yeah, so I picked Galaga 88 just because it's something on the TurboGrafx Mini that I was playing. And yeah, it's basically Galaga, but kind of easier. So it lets you start off with like the double ship, which is really not so much a double. It's not the exact same thing as the double ship, but you can start off with basically one less life and the double ship rather than having to do the thing where you shoot down, you know, get captured and shoot down and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like updated graphics and like kind of new, like there's actual backgrounds with like scenery, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you didn't really have in the original. It's really just like an evolution of the game. Like the characters, you know, the enemies are a little bit bigger, little better graphics. There's apparently a story that goes along with it.
I guess, per the endings.
The endings have stories. it's on a lot of systems. Sometimes it's called Galaga 90. Galaga 90 is the same game as Galaga 88. I guess when it was released in the US, they decided 88 sounded too old or something. So, or it took 2 years to port. It's probably more accurate. Mm-hmm. So it was released as Galaga 90, and it's on, like, you know, all the collections and stuff. But yeah, otherwise, I always think of it as, like, Galaga, but slightly easier and with better graphics.
Yeah. I love this game. I love Galaga. I love Galaga 88. I played the original arcade version on MAME with this one. And yeah, it looks fantastic. I also played the PC Engine version, which I also played back in the day. And it doesn't look as good. It's definitely a port, but it's a very good port. As you and I traded some emails about, the PC Engine and the arcade versions both have different endings. Very, very different endings.
Yeah, I didn't realize Galaga 88 in the arcade had some bizarre ending.
Let's just leave it at that one. Listeners, go to YouTube, do a long play, and just watch the ending of the arcade version of Galaga 88 and email us, email at retrogameclub.net, your
fan fiction based on the ending of Galaga 88.
yes.
It's very bizarre, yes, and also clearly not a native English speaker.
No. But I didn't realize this was on Game Gear too.
Yeah, I kind of vaguely remembered it. I don't know. I didn't try it. I don't know how good it could be on there.
But it really is the same game to a point as regular Galaga, but you do have the big bosses.
Right, your boss fights, you have like the kind of like you're flying through an asteroid field stages, and you can get the triple ship. Mm. Which is about all the ways you can upgrade Galaga without completely making it a different game.
Yeah.
There's also like Galaga Arrangement, which if you like Galaga 88, you'd like Galaga Arrangement. Galaga Arrangement is to me a lot like Galaga 88.
Is it before or after Galaga 88?
Yeah, it's after. I mean, I played it in like 2000.
Okay.
I think it probably came out in the 90s. So Galaga Arrangements, yeah, it's on like every collection. I like that one a lot. Maybe that might be my overall favorite Galaga version. But that is also like Galaga, but super easy. It is definitely the easiest version of Galaga.
So as time goes on, they get easier?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think they give you more power-ups. You know, I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to. They increase the number of power-ups you get.
So, yeah, on eBay you could get for $15 on TurboGrafx Galaga 90 with the case and the booklet.
Okay. That's
a pretty good price. But if you have the TurboGrafx Mini, you're all set.
You already have it, yeah. The language barrier will not be a problem with Galaga.
No. Yeah, any closing thoughts on it?
Nope. No, just... This is a fun game.
Yeah,
don't have to think too hard. You know, I don't like thinking.
And if listeners have any feedback on any of these games or any games we played, email at retrogameclub.net.
Yeah. Do you want to tease our next games?
Yeah, I'm going to go for one that I've never played that's on the Switch Online called Stunt Race FX.
Okay, so that's on the Switch Online, so I can play that.
Yep, but so, I think it was a Super Nintendo game.
Okay. It's sort of like a virtual racing-ish game, right?
Yeah, but a little more bubbly.
Okay. I'm going to go with Donkey Kong Jr.
Ah, nice.
Which that's probably also on the Switch Online, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah.
All right, let's dig into some listener feedback, how about? I have not read this stuff in advance, so it's going to be a disaster. Usually I reformat it into notes that then I could read because I'm terrible at reading stuff out loud. but I'm just going to... So Majors writes in, talks about the ODE Saturn Dreamcast replacements. He hopes you are using the R menu instead of hitting the button on the Phobie. See, this I told you I had to prep these.
Yes, I am.
I'm using the R menu. Did the R menu exist? Okay.
Yes.
Did you know it existed?
Yes.
The answer is yes. He also bought 5 to 6 PS2s from a shop that were basically being dumped due to having issues, and they were all laser issues, and eventually he got all of them to boot and gave 4 of them away because he never paid for them in the first place. To someone who was trying to hack them to make a portable PS2. I wish there was a link to whether or not that was successful.
Yes.
yeah, he also enjoyed... that's one person who enjoys the reviews of old magazines. And he did order from one of those sketchy places in the back of EGM called Game Express, where he got a 52-in-1 NES cart from Saudi Arabia. Wow. All right. Was a big fan of Space Harrier, played it at Golfland Arcade, which I'm assuming is a mini golf place. What do you think?
It's got to be.
Has to be. Mini golf arcades. That's a thing of the past, man. There's a mini golf place by me that also has like a party room. You know, like you rent it off like birthday parties and stuff. And they have like a bunch of NESs hooked up in there.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm sure kids can totally relate to. And the one he played was the deluxe version with the hydraulic moving cockpit. All right.
Yeah.
I don't recall playing that one.
Oh, I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking of Star Wars Arcade now, not Space Harrier. He got a lot of 8 sealed Galaga 90s for $5 each from a flea market. That is a great awesome. Find right there.
Yeah, that is a great find.
That is a great find. And then he also wants to recommend Spriggan for people who want to import PC Engine games.
That sounds familiar.
It does. Is that on the mini? You're going to have to edit this part while I look for this.
There will be a lot of editing in the show.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, it's both.
I believe that is on the mini. It is, unless it's under a different name, it's not. Okay. Something called... You see, there's a couple things that have names like Spriggan. I don't want to tell you offhand if it's the same game. All right, you want to get the next email?
Yeah. So Eric writes in, and he enjoyed Dynamite Cop. And he wants to know what we think of Zombies Revenge, which I don't think I've played.
Let me see here. It's a Dreamcast game released in 1999. I do not know this game. So this could be potential Halloween material.
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks for showing this to us. I don't think I played this. And it does look like...
a lot like Dynamite Cop.
Yeah. Like same engine or something. Yeah, that looks cool. Nice big bosses in there. So, no, we didn't know about it, and thank you for telling us about it. And wants to know if we know any other games like that for the Dreamcast. Not so much. You know, with Dreamcast, I played a lot of Ready to Rumble and, like, Jet Grind Radio and stuff like that. Not so much these kind of games.
Yeah. Yeah, I mostly did, like, arcade ports and then the one or two RPGs that are on the system.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Dreamcast had the best arcade ports. But so he wanted to talk about the R4 cards, which if you listen to our previous episode, I talked about emulating on a DS or 3DS. So that's what an R4 card can do. He says, I'm right about the card bricking itself. He wonders if it could brick the system too. I'm sure it's possible, but I don't see how it would. It's almost like using these cards are, it's like a soft mod. So I don't think it would brick a system like doing a hard mod on trying to emulate on other systems. He mentions you can also soft mod a 3DS, which he hasn't done. But he wonders if we used any of the other kind of SD cards for the DS or 3DS, like the M3, the EZ Flash Omega, or the Ace cart. I used the M3 back in the day because I think that was the first one. And I haven't used any of the others, but I looked up this Ace cart one, and it looked pretty cool. So if any listener is looking to do some emulation on the 3DS, that might be a good option. Honestly, I do have a feeling that most of these cards are exactly the same. It's just that the first person who invented it just had their just got ripped off by everyone else and they put different names on it. That's just my guess.
Could be, yeah. The Ace card has a very interesting website.
Is that the one with a girl on it listening to
music?
Yeah,
like it's yes. A model from like an MP3. Like a MP3 player you would have bought for your 10-year-old daughter in the year 2004.
See, that's how they advertise this stuff. Like, hey, you could put MP3s on your 3DS and use this cart to play them.
Oh, so they're trying to make it sound like it's not for piracy?
Yes. Even though MP3s are kind of piracy anyway, right?
yeah. This is, how much is this thing?
I didn't see, but Eric has one, and he says it's a very simple interface. He uses it on his DS Lite, and it works great. Yeah, the M3 card had a bit of a weird interface, if you remember this. And yeah, and I really think the R4 card is just an updated M3 card. I hope everyone that has never done any DS emulation is following all these acronyms and stuff.
So, interestingly, the Ace card seems pretty cheap. Although, the only ones I see on the store right now are for the DSi.
Hmm.
Oh, it says it has DSi, but it apparently supports 3DS. So, I have a DSi XL. Oh, and I guess I had a DSi and a D... Yeah, wait... I have a DS. This is like, I know I have a problem. I get it. So I have a DS Lite and then I think a DSi XL. And these things are like $20. I mean, this is like a real big investment here.
Well, exactly. And that's why some of them brick themselves after a while. It doesn't sound like the Ace cart does. Eric can write back and tell us if it does. But if you want a cheap card, again, you want the R4 Gold Pro or Plus. I forget which one it is. And that one never bricks itself. And it's still like $20. And you could play every DS game. It works on 3DS and DS Lite and stuff. And 3DS, yeah. It works on 3DS, DS Lite, all that stuff. And yeah, you could play Genesis games, NES games, all that stuff. Now, the emulators on them for the 8-bit and 16-bit games aren't the best, but they're pretty passable. And Eric does link us to a possibly the only useful Reddit thread ever, and it just breaks down all these carts. So I'll put this, it'll probably be the only ever Reddit link in our show notes, but I'll put this in our show notes. Just don't read the comments. Never read the comments in Reddit. And all right, Eric, thanks for writing in. You want to grab the next one?
Yeah, let's see. Joe also wrote in to talk about the EGM things. He says he thinks he has a copy of it still. He says it's kind of low key for an anniversary issue and appreciates that he now gets the Portillo's references in the articles. So that's great. Yeah, I guess no one outside of Chicago has ever heard of Portillo's, right?
No,
location somewhere else now.
Yeah, it's pretty much Illinois, I think.
Yeah. Talks about Shockwave as being one of the games previewed in there that did come out for 3DO. If I said it didn't, that was definitely a mistake on my part because I own this game. So, yeah. And I also was surprised to hear about that game called Ding Dong because it seems to me no one knows what that game is. I think it'd be a good... people look for Polybius all the time, right? I think we should look for this mythical Ding Dong game.
Yeah, that'd be a good topic.
Yeah. we hunt that down. You see, the next issue of EGM did have some new layouts, but it was pretty subtle. And tried Galaga 88, specifically the TurboGrafx-16 version. And he really liked the way that they did the theme music and it has a final boss with different endings. Played the 32X version of Space Harrier, which he also liked a lot. And he said the Saturn version is just about arcade perfect, as is the version in Shenmue. He grew up on the Master System version, which manages to do sprite scaling pretty well. And he said it's pretty hard. He could only get to about level 16 in it. And I want to note the Master System version had exclusive content, like the ability to play as a jet through a code, and then also new music and a last boss. An exclusive last boss, I should say. And then wants to recommend the Switch port of it. If you want to check it out today.
Hmm. Nice. Yeah, it's probably not too much money on Switch, too.
And at least on social media, Robert wrote in to mention he had a Space Harrier PCB set on a mounting plate. It was huge, really heavy, ton of chips. And that he would appreciate an East episode sometime. that he has some e-schemes for Android, but doesn't know where to start. And that's probably, like, part 1 and 2. East 1 and 2 are on Android. I don't know if they did anything else on there. I think I have both of those, but I'm not a big fan of touchscreen controls, so I either have to get, like, a gamepad or something to play them.
But you also have them on other systems, so...
They're pretty close to the game called East Chronicles, which is on Steam and PSP.
So I'm looking through all my 3DO ISOs, and I don't have Ding Dong. Now, there's some
So you got to go back. That was a game that was being advertised as an import game for PC Engine.
Oh, that was PC Engine?
Yeah.
Okay,
let me go. It was one of those sketchy... the sketchy ads in the back?
Okay.
One of the games you could order was a game called Ding Dong for PC Engine. Not to be confused with the short-lived pro wrestling tag team, the Ding Dongs.
Yes. And no Ding Dong.
There's no Ding Dong. It's not a game.
Well, was it a CD or not? I looked through. That was my Hue cards.
It doesn't matter because I checked Google, which is more accurate than your ROM collection. So now again, it could be a translation thing. Like, I don't know what the translation could be.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the ads in the back of EGM. I bet you there's a lot of question. You know, I bet they're advertising, willing to take your money for a whole host of games that didn't actually exist.
Yeah, because it's like, who are you going to go for? You're not going to fly to Japan or wherever, wherever they're sending it from.
It's not like EGM. You know, like, I think there's plenty of places that probably ran an ad for a couple of months and just took money for orders. And then mysteriously went out of business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how a lot of these things worked. It's no different than like the, X-ray specs you would order out of a comic book, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The hovercraft you could build at the back of
it. Yeah, right. yeah, I'm looking for that ad here again here. One of these pages. Sorry to rehash this topic, the mystery of Ding Dong. Here it is. So it's a company called Game Shock, and they, in their PC Engine, are advertising Galaxy Detective Galavan. Devil Hunter, I think that is a real game.
Mm-hmm.
Macross 2036 sounds real.
That's
Street
real.
Fighter 2 Championship Edition, that is real. Super R-Type. Might have been called something a little different. Bomberman 93. Ding Dong. Mystic Formula. And Rainbow Island. Rainbow Island is real.
So far, well, I'm looking up Mystic Formula.
Okay.
But the rest are real other than Ding Dong.
Mystic Formula might have been called, your round might be called something different, but I believe that is a real game.
Yeah, this is a real game. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know what Ding Dong could be. I realize people don't want to hear me talk about this anymore, but it has to just be a bad translation of a different game.
I can't let it go. Yeah, I need to know what it is. Please, listeners, if you have any ideas of what Ding Dong is on PC Engine, email at retrogameclub.net.
Now, it's the cheapest game. It can't be very good because it's the cheapest game they have for PC Engine. So it's either really common or really terrible, and they're trying to get rid of it.
It's definitely not common. It's probably really expensive now if it exists at all.
Yeah. I'm looking at the other things from Game Shock. And, like... Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing. Like, they're advertising that they have Mortal Kombat for Sega CD. Right? Which, that didn't come out for like a full year.
I guess it's a pre-order, maybe?
You know, it says new releases, Mortal Kombat, available on Super Nintendo, Genesis, Sega CD, Game Boy, and Game Gear. It's definitely not. I mean, it was definitely like a full year later before we got a Sega CD version. So, yeah.
Well, all right. That pretty much wraps it up. I think we got Stunt Race FX and Donkey Kong Jr. as our new Game Club games.
Yes. All right. I think that's everything, right?
Yeah, we survived a very, very interesting episode here.
Unprepared episode, yeah. Well, yeah, like I said, for a time when there's less to do than ever, I seem to have more to do than ever. So.
Yeah, I hear you.
Or I'm just lazier. I don't know.
Well, all right. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening.